Hey, this is Lori from Hike, sharing stories that inspire us to explore, wander, and live. Today, I get to bring you Matt Dunn. He is an Ozark Highlands trail thru hiker and also wrote a book about it. It's called A Moss-Covered Trail, A Walk Across the Ozark Highlands. And when I read his book, I felt so immersed in the trail. It really felt like I was there. He's so descriptive and shares so much of his journey that, you know, it does feel like the reader is right there along the trail with him. And those are the stories that I want to bring to you, my listeners. So take a listen to my conversation with Matt Dunn and learn more about his walk along a moss-covered trail. So I'm here today with Matt Dunn. Matt, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about my home state.
Yeah, so I had found you, I had found you on Instagram when I was doing some research on the Ozark Highlands Trail. And so that's how we met. And then, you know, I saw that you were also doing a bunch of cool things. And let's talk about you. Let's talk about first, obviously, Arkansas is your home state, but where are you at now?
I'm in Boise, Idaho. I've been here for about 12 years. I came here for work originally with the Forest Service and met my wife in 2007 here, and then been here most of the time ever since.
What do you do? What's your kind of non-hiking life?
I'm a wildland firefighter for the Bureau of Land Management. I've been doing it for this past year was my 16th year. I've also worked for the Forest Service as a firefighter as well as the National Park Service, and have worked in I've been based in several states and visited a whole lot more on fires. And currently, I'm working for Boise Helitack, a firefighting crew. Basically, we get the helicopters on a nice fancy helicopter, which is a lot of fun.
And do they drop you in, or what's that about?
That's correct. Yeah, we get dispatched to fires. We basically find a safe place to land. We get out, grab our tools, and most of the time we connect a bucket that is capable of picking up water. And then the pilots, they take off, grab some water and support us as we as we work the fire. It's a rad job. I like getting dropped off with 24 hours worth of food and water and going to work. It's a good job for sure.
And so this is the slow season, right? Now you're heading into kind of maybe some time off.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. So definitely it was a kind of a quiet summer overall, which is it's good to see that for a change. it's quiet. I'm actually on furlough right now, so I'm taking it easy, just doing some physical training, a lot of yoga, and getting ready for next year slowly.
And it's interesting because someone I had interviewed earlier this year was a fire lookout. He volunteered and he was visiting all the lookouts in Montana and Idaho, so kind of the other end of the whole firefighting thing of trying to identify and keep an eye out on the fires as they start.
Yeah, I saw that episode, and I haven't listened to it yet, but it's definitely on the playlist, and look for it. Yeah, I enjoy what they their viewpoint as well.
You've been doing this for 16 years, and you've also done a lot of hiking. So tell me, were you always a hiker? Did you grow up with a big outdoors interest, or what got you started into hiking and kind of the outdoors life?
Sure. I grew up in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Lived there until I was 18, then went to school in Central Arkansas. Growing up, we would take trips, even within Arkansas to Devil's Den, Mount Magazine, kind of places that are fairly close to where I grew up, as well as we take some bigger trips. The most memorable being in the summer of 88, we went out to Glacier National Park, and then on to Yellowstone during the fires, which may or may not have planted the seed for my current career. But yeah, that's probably one of the most tactile experiences of hiking was being in Glacier and seeing the mountains, the scenery was made a big impression on me as a 10-year-old, and multiple visits to Colorado and Wyoming in the aftermath of that really made me want to come out west and you know, see what all there was to see out here. And been out west now since mostly, I think I've since college graduation, essentially since about 2000. I've spent some time in Arkansas since living, but for the most part, I'm living out here and kind of use my job or see my job as one way to kind of see the West and see places that I haven't seen yet.
So even though you've been out west, you also kind of have been drawn home. And one of the things that drew you there to your home state was to hike the Ozark Highlands Trail. And from what I had seen and read, and you know, you'd wrote a book about it, so we'll talk about that, that you had, I could think, first section hiked it, right? And then decided to do a through hike.
Yeah, that's correct. And to kind of back up a little bit more to your last question, too, growing up, too, we had behind our house, there was a wooded lot. Maybe 4 or 5 acres, if that big, but that became my playground. I'd spend a lot of time there after school and in my free time, hanging with my buddies at the time, playing war, building forts, things like that. So from a young age, the woods for me were a home. They weren't just a refuge. It was a place where I felt comfortable and was a very just a really cool environment for me to hang out in. And it flashed forward to 1998. My dad actually was getting into backpacking at the time. And so he invited me along on a trip for us to do the Shores Lake Loop, which encompasses part of the Ozark Highlands Trail. And so that was my first backpack. We hiked, it's a 13-plus-mile loop. And it was a lot of fun. It was really hard at that point. I don't think I'd ever carried that much weight for that long. And, but yeah, we spent the night, hiked up, spent the night on top of White Rock, and then, hiked back down the next day. And, kind of that was the start of it all. In subsequent years, when I returned, yeah, I'd go on trips, overnight trips with my father and day hikes as well. Yeah, it was just a really cool trail. Pretty primitive. You know, you really feel like you're out there, when you're on it. And so over a couple years, I section hike almost all of it. There are a couple little bits here and there that I'd missed, especially the beginning. So at the time when I started section hiking, they had closed down the first couple miles of the trail while the city of Portsmouth was enlarging the reservoir that feeds the water system. So and that went on for years and years until I want to say sometime in early 2008 is when they finally were able to put in the first couple miles, kind of a reroute from the original route. And then, and so that and the last section I hiked along the Buffalo River, really the only parts I hadn't seen the trail when I did my through hike.
So for someone who's not familiar with the area or the trail, what in your mind, kind of what makes it so unique and special, and, you know, how would you describe it to someone, you know, who's just brand new, you know, hasn't been on it, and what would they expect?
You know, it is fairly primitive. You know, the trail, it's really, for the most part, pretty true single track. You know, there'll be times, even after hiking it several times, you know, there'll be times I'll be walking and I'd have to look around and make sure I was still on track, because it is just a small little path in the woods. But that's also an attraction. It's, you know, I think a lot of people visit it, and I'm sure a ton of people hike it, but you don't get that feeling when you're on it. It's fairly remote, lots of, I guess, solitude and quiet, and there are lots of, I mean, the scenery is just rad. It's, you know, hiking in the woods there brings back those memories for me as a young guy, just the smell of the woods, you know, the air, it's, again, very, kind of brings me back. But, an attraction for new people, I think, would definitely be just you really do feel like you're immersed when you're out there. And for me, that's a really really cool feeling. It feels very very at home to me.
Now, I know you did your thru hike of it, I think, was it in 2008?
Yes, ma'am, that's
Yeah,
correct.
so it's been a while, since then. And I know one of the things that kind of caught me when I was reading your book, that there was a lot of solitude for you out there. And I'm sure as time goes on, and especially as hiking, there's a lot more people who are getting outdoors and definitely looking for trails to thru hike as they're trying to get that solitude, right? Trying to get away from maybe the crowds that might be on the AT or, other really well-known trails. Do you feel like it's probably, I guess, first increased in popularity and awareness? And what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think the profile of the trail is definitely risen, and it was a couple of years before I hiked it, and I can't recall the year, but I think Backpacker Magazine rated it as one of the top trails, long trails in the country, and that didn't bring a huge influx of people, but just judging from the contact I've had with readers in my book, and just kind of little snippets here and there in the news, it's definitely picked up in profile, and which is great. I think. I think any time, any reason we can give people to head out to the woods is a good one. Whether it be, a day hiker, a backpacker, a hunter, a birder, anything like that. I think, again, anything we can do to publicize that and share that with more folks is a positive thing for sure.
Yeah, so let's talk about that kind of thought of solitude and I guess in your sense, first I thought it was really interesting that you decided to write about your hike. So like what were you thinking? Did you know when you were doing that hike that eventually you wanted to put that into print?
I wasn't sure I wanted to put it in print, but I knew I wanted to write about it. Because for me, like writing in my journal and putting into words my experience has always been a way to really kind of seal it in my memory and help me remember it. And so, I didn't have envision any grand book or anything when I started out. And I think even by the time I finished, I hadn't thought about it. But within a couple of days after being off the trail, I knew I wanted to get it all down on paper before it slipped away. Because I felt like I wasn't the same person at the end of the trail that I was at the first, and I wanted to kind of capture that, if nothing else, just for myself, kind of for selfish reasons.
So, were you journaling in the evening, or doing any kind of notes, or did you kind of figure that out like when you got back?
I did something different for this hike than I'd ever done, and I carried a really lightweight recorder and like a tiny little flip notebook too, so I could kind of make notes. I was taking photographs along the way, so in addition to photographic notes, I would just make other little notes of things that had happened, and also just talking to my recorder anytime, because as you walk through the woods, different things pop in your head, and or you see different things, and so for the most part, I did the recording stuff in the evenings, although a couple times during the day, I'd just be walking along and something would come into my mind that I wanted to remember. So usually other than that, usually I would just carry like a small notebook or a pad of paper and then write everything down. But this was just quick notes that I'd written down for it.
Because I gotta say that when I read your book, I was so impressed with, I think, the detail and the level of detail and the immersion. And I really did feel like I was there alongside of you on the trail. And I've read a couple other, a few, books that people have written about their time on the trail, but this one I think really spoke to me like that. And I was curious if you had heard that feedback before, if you kind of realized that after, you put it out there.
Well, thank you for that. And then that was the ultimate goal with the book is to basically looking over my shoulder as I walked, or be with me as I walked, and looking at and seeing the same things I did. Two primary influences on that kind of style were number one, Earl Schaefer's book, Walking with Spring. He was the first Appalachian Trail thru hiker. A great book. I think I'd reread that. I think I reread it right after I had hiked the trail, just because I wanted to find. It's almost like finding someone I could relate to again. And the other author that that influenced me. I think it was Carson McCullers in her book, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. It's a fiction book, but the way she can describe like a Southern night, it really spoke to me. And I loved her style. I still love her style. I think she's an incredible author, very underrated. And that was, I guess, if anything, I wanted to imitate or emulate, this would be a better word, those two authors, Earl Shaffer and Carson McCullers.
Oh, cool. So let's talk about the hike itself. And, you started the hike, it was in the fall, right, of 2008.
Yes,
So
ma'am.
what went into the prep for it? Food, shelter, kind of figuring out what was in your pack.
I've been that way almost 10 years, and I had done some shorter hikes, but nothing nearly approaching that kind of length of time or distance. But by then, I'd had to keep a list of stuff that I'd bring, and basically, I had kind of my go-to gear that I had. So it was the first time, though, I did try one new thing, and that was instead of a tent, which weighed a couple pounds, I just brought a lightweight tent or a lightweight tarp, excuse me, and that I could just tie between some trees at night. And that way be sheltered from the rain, but instead of being, 2 or 3 pounds, I believe it weighed 6 or 7 ounces. It was super light, but it was really effective. It kind of converted me from being a tent guy to a tarp or no tarp at all guy. Yeah, so before I went, I finished work that year the first week of October, about 5 weeks before I started. So I went down to southern Utah and Escalante Country, which I'd been to several times already, but that was kind of my shakedown backpacking experience. So I kind of finalized the things I thought I'd need and tested some more food options, and that kind of sharpened the sword, so to speak. So when I got back to Arkansas the first week in November, it was just a matter of just getting everything ready to go and picking a date.
Now, you did say in the book that, when you're talking about your hike, that you were, I mean, it was like a typical, like what you'd think of from a hiker diet. It was like the noodles and, tortilla type things, a lot of processed food. Is that something that you would change now, kind of going back and looking at it?
Luckily, there are a lot better and healthier options these days. My diet's changed a lot since I did that as well. And so I think I would focus on, and what I use these days, a meal more focused on like rice and lentils, something that's rather than just straight pasta noodles. I think that it gives you energy, but not a lot of nutrition
But what
for
for
sure.
yeah, but for what you needed, you definitely did use, that energy, or it came in handy. I know you were also drinking a lot of tea during this hike. Is that something that was that just your tea drinker versus a coffee drinker, or did you feel like that was helpful?
Actually, it's funny. I'm more of a coffee guy at this point in my life. But I found a kind of a powdered tea, a powdered yerba mate that I really liked, and it was good energy. It's really pleasant taste, I thought so. And it was just easy. Yeah, it was just powder, so I could just heat some water, drop it in, and bam, ready to go. And didn't have any tea bags or any coffee grounds. I had to figure out how to dispose of. It was pretty simple in that regard.
And no, that's a good point too. When you were on the hike, I know there was a couple things within your hike as you were describing it, where you were talking about like leave no trace and seeing camps that still like had trash in it and kind of illegal dumping and things like that. So how did that kind of affect you on your hike? I mean, it just seemed like it definitely it seemed to stick with you, at least from what I could read.
Yeah, and 99% of hikers and backpackers out there are practicing some form of leave no trace, or at least I hope. But yeah, it's like the 1% or 1/10 of 1% of people who leave it behind. It definitely kind of ruins it for all of us, I think. And so, but that said, it doesn't excuse us who do leave no trace not to help pick up anyway. Even if it's carrying a pound of trash 5 miles, I think that's still the right thing to do. And you know, and it's just a matter of you know, practicing what you preach, I think.
So, during your hike, it was during hunting season, and I know you were running into some hunters or presence of hunters, and not very many hikers, though.
Yeah, it's yeah, I knew going in it was deer season, and I think within my first mile of hiking I'd already heard gunshots in the distance. And you know, I've never been a hunter myself, but I understand that that's especially in rural Arkansas, that's, you know, important for families who, you know, not only like to hunt, but people who may not be able to afford you know, food from a store necessarily. So and overall, I think, you know, I probably I think I talked to more hunters than I did hikers, and which was cool. Like, you know, because I did, you know, I didn't go out there to get away from people necessarily, but it was nice to run into hunters and especially ask them about if they'd heard a weather forecast or things like that. And some were really friendly, some were didn't want to talk. They just wanted to know where the deer were and wanted to be on their way, which is fine. It's all right. But I think that's a really cool thing, though, that, you know, they. You know, they're users of the trail too. They have a stake, you know, they skin in the game when it comes to trail and public lands preservation. So you know, I think that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you mentioned I think there was one person who you were kind of you knew was ahead of you. They were doing basically a yo-yo, right, of the trail. Someone from I think Louisiana.
Yeah, that's correct. He funny thing was, though, I didn't write down his name, and in the aftermath I could remember it, but so it's the name in the book is a fictional name. It kind of approximates what I remember, but I don't think that well, I'm sure that's not a
That's
real
so
name.
interesting.
But yeah. So I guess if there's any fiction in that, that's it's the name. But yeah, and interestingly enough, I ran into him my first day towards the end of the day. And he'd been out there, I forgot how many days. He'd hiked to the end of, I want to say he'd hiked about 140 miles and then turned around and came back.
Okay,
So,
so not the whole length.
right, he turned around at Richland Creek, he said, and come back. And he was really excited to see me. I think he had a similar experience. He didn't see many people. And so to run into me, even though it was, I believe it was foggy or maybe even drizzling when I ran into him, he was glad to see someone, another hiker for sure.
So let's talk about just like some general overview of the trail. So it's I know it's changed a little bit, you had mentioned from when you had done your hike, but is it about 180 miles or so, or what's the actual length of the trail?
That's a great question because it has really taken off since I hiked it and even since I published my book. At the time I hiked it, the official route was 165 miles. And at that point, it was under discussion to use the Buffalo River Trail. That was kind of the likely route from there to the east. And since then, it's up to about 270 miles of trail right now with the ultimate goal of being, I believe, 320 miles, which will connect it to it'll basically run from Lake Fort Smith all the way to Lake Norfolk in north central Arkansas, and from there it will tie in with Ozark Trail, which goes another ultimately, hopefully, another 300 or 50 or 400 miles all the way to just south of St. Louis. So it's a long process. I think that started back in the early 80s, and I think the Ozark Trail even started in the late 70s. So ideally, you know, in some not too distant future, that someone can start at Lake Fort Smith and walk all the way to St. Louis, which I think is incredible. That'd be one of the longest distance trails in the interior of the U.S. That I think would be it'd be rad. I'd love to do all that.
And is this trail probably, is it something more suited for the cooler months, like for fall, winter, spring?
Absolutely, yeah. I've done the bulk of my hiking in the fall and winter, and but yeah, in the summer with the between the poison ivy, the ticks and chiggers, you know, between I guess late June and probably all the way through September, it'd be kind of rough to be out there with all the critters. But
Really?
once it cools off, yeah, it's a lot nicer.
And speaking of critters, what kind of wildlife did you run into?
Despite it being hunting season, I did see a fair bit of deer, and then basically from there, I saw a little bit of signs of bear. Didn't see any. I've only seen one bear in Arkansas in my life, and but yeah, the birds that were really the main wildlife I saw, which is rad. Everything from turkeys to sparrows to this owl I saw one day that was just glaring at me. Those were the main things I saw along the way,
That
which
might have made me feel a little antsy. The owls looking at you. Yeah. So yeah, you said you kind of maybe saw some evidence of bear, but no bear. I mean, were you so speak of like your food on the trail? Would you have hung it? Would you have put it away from your sleeping area? What would be the recommendation there?
I hung my food every night, I believe every night, and that's a lot of my early hiking experience or backpacking experience was in Yellowstone, actually. So that was always kind of an ingrained habit from those days. I worked and lived in Yellowstone in the summers of 99, 2000, 2001. So I'd recommend it. I think it's a good practice. I think there, I've heard of a few instances of hikers encountering bears along the trail, but I don't think anyone's ever actually been injured or really chased off that much. I think it's more of a you go your way and I'll go mine, and we'll stay away from each other. But yeah, I think that's just a good practice for most hikers. Yeah, just hang your food or separate it from your sleeping area just in case,
When you were out there, and you mentioned also that there were a lot of like really cold mornings and like kind of chilly nights. How did did you feel like you had brought warm enough gear and clothes, or would you have maybe changed something, or what would you recommend to someone kind of going out during those colder months? What should they be prepared to encounter?
Yeah, and especially if you're doing multiple nights, I kind of plan for a worst case scenario or coldest case scenario. I feel that the stuff I brought was adequate. Not wouldn't say especially luxurious by any means, but I think one of the coldest nights I've ever had backpacking was along the trail. It was actually when I was section hiking it, and I remember I had a water bottle in my tent and it froze. I think it was in the teens that night. And so, yeah, some of the day you might be hiking on a 60-degree day with your, in short sleeves and, sweating and having just a great time. And then the next morning, it could drop down in the 20s, no problem. The Ozarks, just like a lot of places, the weather can be kind of fickle. And in addition to that, a lot of the, better campsites are kind of closer, kind of in the drainage bottoms where the cold air tends to pool at night. So, it's, obviously convenient to camp near water. That can be part of, I guess part of the problem. But, overall, just, look at a forecast, plan accordingly, and then plan, or prepare for the worst.
So, kind of in line with that and with planning, I know everyone kind of, your mileage may vary, but what seemed to be, what you would make for your day? Was it, were you looking at, 10 miles, 15 miles? Like what kind of was the average throughput of your hike, and did you kind of arrange that so you knew where to camp?
Overall my average was about 15 miles a day, although that's the average. One day I put in 22 or 23 miles, and another day I only put in like 7 or 8, I believe. So I took that day by day. I knew in fact my first day I didn't have a set campsite in mind. I knew kind of since I'd already section hiked much of it, I kind of knew where some good areas were to hike. I'd already noted those in my trail guide. And so just take it day by day, go by feel. I think in any part of the trail you could spend days out there just with a base camp or maybe even hiking 2 or 3 miles a day, just and see so much and just really enjoy yourself. So But you know, when it came to daily mileage, you know, I tend to get after it, just because, yeah, I like hiking, and I want to see, always want to see what's over the next ridge and around the next bend in the trail.
What I thought was interesting, you just kind of mentioned it too, is that some of the time, I mean, you really were taking it as in, setting up your camp and then exploring a little bit. And honestly, that's not something I hear about a lot with other hikers of just, saying, yeah, I'm gonna explore a little, maybe off trail, maybe just to see what it's about. Not necessarily that I'm just trying to push through and get from, point A to point B, on this through hike. So tell me a little bit more about your approach to that and how exploring, how that impacted you, I guess.
Yeah, and for me, my philosophy was, you know, I'd give myself, and food-wise, I planned for, you know, roughly 2 weeks. I knew kind of from my shakedown time what my daily mileage could be, and so forth. So, you know, I, with any plan, you know, just I wouldn't say just don't be so rigid with things. Just most of all, again, first goal number one is to just have a fun hike, enjoy yourself. I've definitely had days or other hikes where I've just tried to push hard to get in the miles, and you know, at some point that your return on that isn't as good. You know, you're not enjoying yourself. So, you know, whether you're a beginning hiker or backpacker or even an advanced or well experienced one, I think there's a lot to be said for, yeah, for taking the time to just enjoy your surroundings, and especially if you can just take off your pack and you know, check out your surroundings, and because there's so many cool places along the trail, the Ozark Highlands Trail, that you can drop your pack and just take a look at, you know, everything from like a natural bridge to go look for sinkholes and caves, or follow streams to see if you can find waterfalls and whatnot up drainage. You know, again, I could have spent 12 days just in any one of those sections, just going a couple miles on the trail and stopping and checking out what else was around the area. Because it's just, yeah, it's just there's so much to see, and it's beautiful country. It's what, you know, what I consider, you know, my home country, and my goal ultimately was to get to know it a little bit better.
And when you were exploring and kind of going through the trail, you do mention a lot about the streams and the water, and just it seems like there were some really beautiful sections there, whether they were boulder-filled streams and things like that. So tell me a little bit more about the different water crossings and different features that you came across.
You know, I luckily the time of year I hiked was the water was, you know, decently flowing. That can greatly affect kind of your any hiker's plans. If there's a lot of water, there are some stream crossings that can be kind of dicey. I definitely in the section 4 of the OHT, the Lewis Prong area, I remember I'd hiked through there when it was just pouring rain, and at a water crossing that was almost up to my hips. And I was not very comfortable doing that. Yeah, just the streams there, when it's just flowing normally, they're kind of this beautiful, like kind of light, like milky green, that's just gorgeous, especially when you get to some of the pools and the bigger bodies of water. So yeah, I think that's really rad to me. You know, just the sitting beside a pool with maybe a little waterfall, and just taking the time to enjoy my time out there. There's also a water, or actually a crossing of the upper reaches of the Mulberry River, which luckily wasn't flowing too hard when I went through. But it's there has been one fatality on the trail, and it was at that crossing of the Mulberry River, and it was by a gentleman from New York who unfortunately was caught in the high waters and swept away. So you know, water crossings, there's definitely that element, you know, of danger, but I think by just be willing to you know, adapt if that is the case, and be willing to turn back, or just take the appropriate precautions is, you know, be your best plan for sure.
Yeah, no, that's really smart. I mean, people need to be, I guess, to respect the water and know our limits and not get ourselves into a dangerous situation with that. For someone who may not be able to hike the entire Ozark Highlands Trail, whether, you know, they're able to do a few days or just even, you know, they're able to do a day hike, what are some areas, you know, let's take it from a day hike perspective that you would, you know, if you had a friend coming into town and you wanted to show them a great day on the trail, where would you take them?
A great question. A couple things pop out right away. Area around White Rock, kind of towards the western end of the trail, closer to Mountainburg, Arkansas. That's a great place. You can do the Shores Lake Loop, which is long. It's, you know, it'd be a 13-mile day, which is a big day for a lot of folks. But nonetheless, you could people could drive to the top. There's a little loop trail on top of White Rock, which has just incredible views of the Boston Mountains around there. That's probably the top of the list right there. But not too far away is the Spy Rock Loop, which I did just over a year ago with my father. We went out and day hiked it during the Thanksgiving time, and those are probably the two fairly accessible ones, I'd say, to top of the list. And then, another option is the Ozark Highlands Trail Association does have outings. And if someone were interested, they could just get on the website and look up, see when the trip dates are and join in, which I'd highly recommend. I went on several of those. I think I went on maybe three or four of my section hikes with them. And that's a great way to meet people who also love the trail and learn a lot about it. I think each time I went, some of the people along were also trail volunteers too. So it was great getting their point of view on as far as the Cal Trail maintenance works and how many times, you know, how many times eight section hiked it as well. And so, those are, you know, some good options. And, you know, if you're willing to go out a little further, I'd say try to bring a friend in another car and just park at one end of a section just hike the section and then grab a ride back with the other car to where you started. So,
that's a good plan too. You know, both have your cars and then you don't have to double back.
Right. Yeah. it's not a bad option. I've done it before as well. And really enjoyed myself, but to people limited on time who want to see like a whole, section, that's a good option for sure.
And speaking of cars, I know you had arranged, I think your family, your parents might have been bringing your truck to meet you, right? When you were done and,
yes.
you weren't quite sure if it would be there or not, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I trusted my parents. I mean, they're wonderful people. But, when I told them my timeline, you know, I said, you know, anywhere from 10 to 14 days, which is, you know, they're both at that point, they were both working and they, you know, they have their own lives and priorities. So, I was a little bit nervous, but I figured, if anything, you know, if I finished, at Tyler Bend and my truck wasn't there, I'd just, you know, stick out my thumb and hope for the best.
And so this, you know, even though it wasn't, you know, it was just 11 years ago, but you know, cell phones weren't as prevalent, or at least, you know, the smartphone version of them. And definitely, I think there's sections without cell service anyway, out there on the trail. Did you have like a satellite, any kind of spot or inReach type of communicator, or were you just, you know, on the trail?
On the trail. I've been dating my wife at that point for just over a year, and you know, on one hand wanted them to know I was safe, on the other hand, like I knew that cell reception was super spotty. You are out there, and so I chose not to bring it and just rely on my my woodsmanship to get me through safely.
So that's an interesting thought, and I wondered, is that something that you still practice, or what's your thought on that today?
Mm-hmm. I'd say these days when I do hike, a lot of times I do bring my phone, but typically I'll put it in airplane mode and bring it just to take pictures. Phones these days, the phone I have now is way more resolution than the little, lightweight camera I carried in 2008. So, and I could take video with it and whatnot. So I wouldn't discourage people from doing that. If I wasn't a longer hike, I would be tempted to maybe send a text to my wife, let her know I'm okay and whatnot. But for the most part, I like to keep it as close to natural as I can.
And I thought it was interesting in a couple of parts in the book, you definitely do touch on that kind of, I guess, the struggle or just, kind of that going into the woods to get away from it all and how we are so bombarded with electronics and devices, TV and all of that. So how did you feel? How long does it take you to kind of shake that off, I guess, and to get acclimated into just kind of being, in your zone in nature?
For me, at that point, like it was just before the really big age of smartphones. But it didn't take me all that long. I'd say probably by the end of the first day, I felt like I was home again, and I felt comfortable out there. It had been a tough day. My pack was at its heaviest, and it ended with a lot of fog and a little bit of rain. But nonetheless, I was excited to be out there and on my own and on that big adventure.
And speaking of your pack and being heavy, you did cache some food though too. Was that about halfway in or?
Yep, I bought one of those 5 gallon buckets from Home Depot and filled it with 7 days worth of food and a change of clothes. And I left it near a trailhead. Just hiked into the woods a little ways and set it next to a log and covered it with leaves and a garbage bag and hope that no hunter or a critter got into it before I got there. So that was I was a little bit worried about doing that, but at that point I didn't have any other really good options. I guess a drawback or a challenge would be there's not a good place to really resupply it or to go into a store or anything. You can mail stuff ahead to there's a country store near on Highway 7 you can potentially mail stuff to, although I don't know, that place usually isn't open that much. But your options would be, if you wanted to go into town for food, yeah, it involved hitching a fairly lengthy ride, and I kind of wanted to avoid that. I wanted to be in the woods as much as possible. And there's even one spot near where I resupplied. Actually, I knew there was a burger joint just down the road a couple miles, and I thought about hitching a ride briefly, but I was just like, I can get hamburgers and milkshakes, any day that I'm out in the real world. And I'd rather, I want to stick with my program and rather eat, frosted mini wheats and, pasta noodles in the woods.
And then really enjoy that burger when you came out for good, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't want to, I'm not going to give away the ending, but I do want to touch on it and just the fact that, at the end of your hike, you're kind of confronted with just that. It feels like you're confronted again as we kind of touch on this kind of going back into civilization and kind of the good and the bad of it, right? So tell me a little bit about how, when you're in the woods and coming out and kind of readjusting, whether it's, just for that weekend or your, a couple weeks or even as, your job where you're also could be extended, for a little while, fighting fires. How do you adjust kind of back into that life where you do have a million things coming at you at once?
That's a tough one. I think that part of what helps is when you are out there, take some time to be quiet and just sit around, and whether you're in camp or at a nice overlook or by a stream, and just take some time to be present. I think that's kind of an undercurrent through the book is me just trying to stop, all the chatter in my head and stopping to really enjoy where I'm at, because I really was like a just a great opportunity to go out in the woods and be quiet and enjoy that. And I think, as you go back to your job and your life, I think those that gives you those moments that kind of tide you over, that kind of help give you kind of a mental reset going forward. But Yeah, coming out was rough for me, and like I said, I don't want to give away the ending either. Really, kind of happened, but you know, it didn't occur to me until actually I was writing the book that that was almost like the perfect metaphor for how a hiker feels going back out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, don't want to give away too
Yeah.
much, but
I
yeah,
know.
that's still.
I do. Yeah, and it is very moving for, you know, for the reader as well. There is a couple paragraphs I'm going to read though, because I want to get your take on this. And I could have picked, I think, anything out of this book. There's so much great content, but just here's a couple paragraphs. Reaching the crossing point, I look up and downstream to see some of the most wild, rough country in the state. The steep walls of the canyon have left car-sized boulders littered all over the creek and on the banks. The elevation of the ridges on either side is about 500 feet above me. Here, the lively look of the green-tinted water contrasts sharply with the leafless trees sullenly hanging over ashen rock of the stream bed. My heart swells with joy as an involuntary smile spreads across my face. This is why I'm doing this hike, for moments like these, to be a silent witness to the backwoods beauty of my native state. I am home. So when you hear that, I mean, I guess what comes to mind?
Yeah, I think it took me a couple of paragraphs to describe those last three words as like, I am home. That was a feeling of a peace, you know, and I felt like I was exactly where I should be right then. And it doesn't happen a lot for, especially for folks who are, you know, busy with life and kids and job and stuff. Like, it's hard to find those moments where you do have some peace and quiet. And for me, you know, I had 12 days of it kind of culminating in that moment by Hurricane Creek where, you know, I knew that was where I needed to be right then. Yeah, I'm glad you read that. That still brings back a lot of memories for me.
Well, it's a very powerful piece of, like you said, of being present, of knowing you're exactly where you need to be. And I think probably it's an overwhelmingly calming kind of feeling of having that all culminate together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's something that really pops the door for those times when you can't be out there.
And so for the listeners, the book is called A Moss-Covered Trail. It's a walk across the Ozark Highlands. And how can people get it? How can they reach out and get their own copy?
Sure. It's available on Amazon, both in paperback and Kindle format. I kept it simple. The pricing is $9.99 for either, although if you do buy the paperback version, the Kindle comes along free with that. And, you know, my goal with it is to donate at least 10% of what I make from the book back to the Ozark Highlands Trail Association. They made my hike possible. Without the volunteers out there, that would not have been the hike it was. And I am in debt to a lot of folks who I've never met and may never meet. And also I'd recommend too, speaking of books, there's the way I learned about the trail is through Tim Ernst's writing specifically. He does have a guidebook to the trail that I use as kind of my Bible when I section hiked it and through hiked it. A great guide. He has a bunch of different books about day hikes all over Arkansas, as well as his photography is incredible. I'd highly recommend. I believe his website is Tim Ernst. ernst.com.
All right. I'll put links. I'll look it up and I'll put links to his site and, of course, to be able to Amazon, you know, to be able to pick up your book as well. What's happening for you? I know you have a little bit of time off right now, but what's happening for you in the next, you know, coming year? Do you have any adventures planned?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, the only thing on the calendar is I'm going to Ireland at the end of March with my family, and I hope to sneak away to do some hiking in County Kerry while we're there. That's the only one so far. I'm hoping maybe I can sneak in a trip to Central America as well, perhaps in February. But kind of waiting to hear back when I start back to work. So, but I hope to make it back out in the woods soon. In fact, I just returned from Arkansas a couple days ago after being down there for Thanksgiving, and yeah, I already want to go back.
Well, how else can people follow along? Is there an Instagram account that people can reach out to and follow?
If they're interested in the trail itself, the Ozark Highlands Trail Association has, they post frequently from everything from upcoming group hikes to beautiful pictures of the trail to trail maintenance efforts. That's a great one to start with. I have my own, and if people are interested, I kind of post a lot of different things, but I'm at Plant Strong Matt on Instagram. That's the best way usually to touch base with me. You might see everything from, purple potatoes that I've cooked to pictures of my dogs or pictures of me hiking with my dogs and Christmas trees. And it's a whole smorgasbord of randomness, I think.
Those are the best accounts to follow. Well, I appreciate your time with me today and for sharing your journey on the Ozark Highlands Trail. And definitely, you know, loved the book. Like I said, I'm kind of a quick reader anyway, but I just kind of dove in over a couple of days and was able to bang it out and really enjoyed it. So, like I said, thanks again, and really excited to share your story out with the listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure to talk about the trail. That's done so much for me. So again, thank you for your time and for all the listeners. Yeah, if you get a chance. The Ozark Highlands Trail is a great option. And if that's too far away, start looking for stuff in your neighborhood. You might be surprised at all the delights that are nearby that you may not know about.
Thanks again for listening today. If you want to connect with Matt, check the show notes for links on how to buy his book and to find him on Instagram. And of course, I'm also linking in the show notes a way to learn more about the Ozark Highlands Trail. And if you'd like to know more about the Ozark Highlands Trail, I've got some more later this season. You'll hear my conversation with Stephen Parker, who is part of the Ozark Highlands Trail Association. So that will be coming your way later this season, so stay tuned. Don't forget to connect with me on social media. You can find me at The Hike Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And hikepodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to read a little bit about what I've written in the past about hiking, you can go find me on my blog, thehikepodcast.com. We'll take you there. So until next time, see you on the trail.